Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're putting trade in the spotlight through the prism of the latest turbulent week of Brexit developments. We'll ask our panel whether the emergence of new trade alliances offers real progress beyond the white noise of some political pronouncements on the subject. We'll track some recent deals, like the EU's recently inked agreement with Japan, to see whether they provide a template that a post-Brexit UK might follow. And we'll assess the unique challenge and risk to the international trade status quo posed by the current incumbent of the Oval Office. We start with Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management. Paul, let's begin by talking about the big trade picture. Lots of deals on the table actually being done. More and more bilaterals, fewer multilaterals. Are we in a new age where there's a lot of exciting trade deals that'll be done? Is this establishing a sort of new order? Or is some of this rhetoric, I don't know, does some of it ring a bit hollow?
I think there is a regrettable shift away from multilateralism and towards what a famous professor called spaghetti bowl economics. That is to say, the trade deals become very complicated and convoluted. We have a trade deal with Japan, Japan has a trade deal with Canada, Canada has a trade deal with Mexico. And the problem with this is that when you do a bilateral trade deal, rather than trying to do a global trade deal, you actually end up putting in place trade barriers against other countries. So Europe and Japan do a trade deal. What that effectively means is that other countries are going to find it more difficult to do trade with Europe and Japan, because Europe and Japan now have an advantage to doing trade with one another, and that works to the detriment of other countries.
On trade then and trade deals, Trump tells his supporters he can make the best ones. Britain's PM Theresa May seems to think that forging new ones after Brexit's pretty straightforward. But what is the reality? Quentin Peel is Associate Fellow of the Europe Programme at Chatham House, former European Bureau Chief of the FT. Quentin, doing these deals, they're complex, they're political often, they're not as easy as Trump, May and the like might have us believe.
Absolutely not. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but the interminable negotiations that we had in things like the Uruguay round or the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, and indeed in the World Trade Organization, and these things run for years, and it's only a few highly specialized lawyers who really get to the heart of it. So at the one moment, they are both very political, because this is about jobs. This is about the dramatic changing of industries. So you have, say, the steel industry declining in Europe and America, growing very fast in China or Korea, and therefore a great battle over who's got access to the market. And so it's both political and complex, which makes for a nightmarish situation.
Well, let's talk more about Trump's pronouncements on trade, especially as they speak to the UK and potentially a post-Brexit UK. On his recent visit here, Trump careened from saying the UK will not get a deal due to a possible ongoing relationship with the EU to saying the UK would be well positioned to agree a favourable deal. Paul Donovan, is one of those two scenarios more likely? And do we need to look beyond what's going on in Donald Trump's head to try and establish why that might be?
I think that over the longer term, a trade deal between the United States and the United Kingdom is perhaps more likely than not over the longer term. Now, that may not happen under the current US president. I'm not sure that anybody, frankly, would want to do a trade deal under the auspices of the current US president, because it clearly wouldn't be a balanced process. But under another president, yes, I think a trade deal is perhaps more likely. That the UK and the US have a long history of trading with one another, that there are certain aspects around regulation and around legal structures which might make it easier to strike a trade deal between the US and the UK. But this is really something for a 10-year-plus view. It's not something which is going to be immediate. And as I said, I think, frankly, we don't want a trade deal where Donald Trump is one of the negotiators.
Dean Turner is economist in the UBS Wealth Management CIO in London. Dean, Trump has threatened there won't be a trade deal for the UK. Almost in the same breath, he's promised a great one between the two. Which scenario is more likely in your view?
I think before we can think about future trade deals, we've got to actually get a clear handle on what the UK's future relationship with the European Union will be, if there is to be one at all, because that ultimately will shape any trade deals that the UK has with other countries. In terms of what's been proposed in terms of the white paper, the government has suggested that UK, certainly in areas of goods, would remain very closely aligned to the EU. I think that's probably a reasonable expectation, purely because UK companies, whether we have a trade deal or not, who wish to sell to the EU would have to abide by those standards. So despite all the noise, that does seem to be the kind of landing area where we're heading. If that is the case, and that clearly would mean that the scope of any trade deals with other countries would have to take that into consideration. It certainly doesn't mean there can't be trade deals. We've got to remember that countries who are in the EEA, such as Switzerland and Norway, can strike their own trade deals with other countries and do so successfully whilst abiding much more closely to the EU rulebook. So my overall thoughts on this is that, yes, look, in time there will be a trade deal between the UK, the US and other countries. But I think we've got to temper our expectations as to what's achievable.
I'm not sure I can temper my expectations any more, Dean. But I suppose if we do need to figure out the Brexit trade impact, where do we look for a little inspiration? Paul Donovan, the EU and Japan just signed a deal, frankly, a huge scale. Where does that leave the UK, for example, as Brexit negotiations drag on? Does that light a potential way forward? Will they be seeking to ape that in the future?
Well, this is one of the more complicated aspects of the whole exit process from the European Union. Is does this mean that the UK is now out of the trade deals? Or alternatively, can the UK say, well, actually, can we just have exactly the same deal as we had within the European Union as our starting point? And that's what the UK is trying to achieve, which presumably means that the UK will try and engineer a trade deal with Japan on exactly the same lines as exists with the European Union. Of course, if the UK is not able to negotiate a trade deal on the same lines or indeed on any lines with Japan, then the UK, on leaving the European Union, is immediately put at a relative disadvantage because it will have different trading relationships with Japan to the rest of the European Union. The remainder of the European Union will have more advantageous terms than the UK does.
And Dean Turner, again, the EU's just signed this trade deal with Japan. Given the broader context, which we've already talked about, will this put the UK under any kind of pressure to replicate a similar deal, maybe others like it?
In terms of replicating existing trade deals that the EU currently has, clearly that's going to be a priority for the UK government after and when Brexit occurs. I suspect what we're likely to see, though, is some delay in striking these agreements. I don't think it's going to be as easy as just rolling over existing terms, because clearly the terms on which existing agreements have been struck, we're talking about very different entities here. We're talking about a trading bloc of 500 million consumers to one that's closer to 60 million.
So a complicating factor here is the increasing number of bilateral trade deals. Let's look at that EU-Japan deal of late also. How do all these moves, Quentin Peel, if we can come back to you, add to the challenge?
It was decided in recent times that actually to do these big multilateral deals was much more sensible, and you didn't have to have lots of different deals and so on. Look at the EU-Japan one. It's actually the largest trade deal that's ever been negotiated. You're talking a huge chunk of global trade that's involved there. And of course, as long as Britain is still a member of the European Union, it will get the benefits of that. Unfortunately, the moment Britain leaves, it has to go off to Japan and try and negotiate the same deal or something very similar. And every time you reopen negotiations like this, there are always lobbies somewhere or other who hope to get an advantage out of the deal. So I don't know what it is. You know, let's say it's some corner of Japanese agriculture which has just given up all its tariff protection to the EU, might try and sort of get it back in a negotiation with the Brits.
Dean Turner, if I can ask you then next, are we witnessing the emergence of new trade alliances, the benefits of which might be illusory as the whole picture, the total effect of all these becomes ever more complicated? Or is most of it or any of it lost amongst the political white noise that we've been hearing?
We need to take a step back and actually understand the core of how trade really works these days. I think we're all guilty of having a mindset that takes us back to the old days where trade really existed in commoditized product being sold from one country to another. The world is very different these days. A significant amount of trade is in supply chain parts. A significant amount of cross-border trade takes place within companies. Understanding those subtle differences, that's more important to understand going forward, because we hear a lot about trade deals, so new markets being opened up. Conversely, we hear about trade tariffs being imposed on goods. I think before we get carried away with all of this, we actually have to have a deeper understanding of the nature of trade. And our sense is that certainly some of the noise we're seeing in both directions, positive and negative, isn't likely to have the kind of impact that we would have previously seen in eras of trade disruption or trade liberalisation.
Finally, on the programme from you, Paul Donovan, we've talked often before about the mantra that, not untrammelled free trade necessarily, but broadly, that trade is good. Is even that fundamental assumption under threat?
Well, I think overall, trade is fundamentally a good thing. It may create negative consequences, particularly around the distribution of income, the distribution of wealth. And it is up to society to offset those negative influences through taxation, redistribution, retraining, welfare, and so on and so forth. But trade itself increases economic welfare, economic efficiency, and increases environmental welfare and environmental efficiency. The way that we are going now with bilateral trade deals rather than multilateral trade deals, with the US sort of sitting in splendid isolation as sort of a northern hemisphere, North Korea, cutting itself off from the rest of the world, yet none of this is good news. None of this is helpful to promoting the well-being of humanity as a whole and the economic standard of living of humanity as a whole. So I think that the direction that we are taking is a less efficient direction than where we were going, and it will lead to fewer benefits for humans than was the case in the past.
A last one for you, Dean Turner. At the risk of asking an impossible question, what kind of Brexit are we going to see? Are we any closer to answering that question? MPs are about to head off on summer recess. Infighting is ongoing. Can we, should we even debate that yet? Or is it all a bit previous?
I don't think we're at the stage yet where we can conclude that no deal is the most likely outcome from all of this. Taking a step back from all the noise, we've got to remember that it's in both sides' interests, economically, politically, and socially, to ensure that there is a smooth exit from the European Union by the UK. But one of the things we have to be conscious of is that, certainly given the political landscape in the UK, and we should never forget democracy is a game about numbers, we've got to question if the Prime Minister has the numbers to get anything like what she's proposing through Parliament. Now, I suspect when push comes to shove, that will be the case, and the Prime Minister will be able to get a deal agreed at home as well as with the EU. But certainly the risks that that doesn't happen have increased at the margin.
A sobering thought to close from Dean Turner. And let's touch briefly on what the future might hold. In terms of the UK, of Brexit, of the deal or no deal, any idea from you, Quentin Peel, after a turbulent week in UK politics?
I think we're down to three options now. We're down to a pretty bad Brexit deal, no deal, or say, sorry, we got it wrong, stay where we are. Those are essentially the choices that we face. It's still incredibly unclear which one we're going to get. Look, everybody in there, on either side of the table, is pretty desperate to do a deal. Whatever the Brexiters say, and Theresa May may say about no deal is better than a bad deal, that is total nonsense. No deal would be terrible. It would be terrible at the Irish border, where you would have to have a border re-erected. It would be terrible at all the British ports. You'd have backlogs of people being checked because there would be no agreement. It would be terrible for the British reputation of sticking by its treaty commitments. We are signatories to thousands of international treaties. This is the single most important treaty relationship we had. If we said, to hell with it, we're walking away, we can't be bothered to meet our commitments, our name would be mud. So it would be a very, very bad deal. So they want to reach an agreement. I would argue that there is no good agreement. There is only damage limitation. This is an enormously complicated relationship we're trying to unstitch. And I think the best description of it all was put by Pascal Lamy, a trade negotiator, former director general of the World Trade Organization, who said, "You're trying to take the egg out of an omelette. It'll cost the egg and it'll cost the omelette."
And that's Quentin Peel, bringing us to the end of this 198th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.